Welcome everyone to this session where I am super excited to be talking with Caroline Mace. This is an interview that I've been looking forward to. We're going to be touching on a few different pieces of Caroline's work. We're going to start exploring the concept of woundology, which I think is an important foundation. And then I'm really excited to get to some of Caroline's more recent work around the power of prayer. And I think more important than ever in some of the times and challenges that we're currently in. Firstly, Caroline, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, Alex. I love it.
So just to give people, I'm sure many people will know who you are, but just to give people that don't a bit of your background, Caroline Mace is a five-time New York Times bestselling author, an internationally renowned speaker in the fields of human consciousness, spirituality, and mysticism, health, energy medicine, and the science of medical intuition. Caroline established her own educational institute in 2003, which offers a diverse array of programs devoted to personal development and draws students from all over the world. In addition to hosting a weekly radio show on Hay House Network, Caroline maintains a rigorous international workshop and lecture schedule. Caroline also developed the field of energy anatomy, a science that correlates specific emotional, psychological, physical, spiritual stress patterns with diseases. And Caroline has a new book coming out in the fall, Power of Prayer, Holy Language, Guidance, and Grace. And I'm particularly excited to read this book because actually a dear friend of mine has been editing it for Caroline. So Caroline, I'd love to start. I read a book of yours.
Edit that biography. I just heard something. Hay House no longer has the radio show.
You know, I was reading that and I was thinking, I thought they stopped the radio show.
They no longer have the radio show. So I just want to jump in and say that. Yeah. So there's no longer the radio show. Go ahead.
Thanks for pointing that out. So I first read Why People Don't Heal and How They Can over 20 years ago. And it was a really helpful book for me at the time when I was on my own healing journey from chronic fatigue. And one of the things that really struck me at the time was this concept you talk about of woundology. And I'd love you just to say a little bit about what that is. And I think people will see how that can be quite relevant where people have had perhaps many years of trauma and how that's impacted upon them and their lives.
Has it been 20 years since Well,
I think it has been. I shall check the publication date, but I think it has. 1997, okay. Dare I say, yeah.
My God. Okay. And actually, today I would expand that, and woundology has become a word that's now in the common parlance, which is amazing. I thought when I started out as a medical intuitive, And I always say to people, first of all, that it was never an ambition to become something I never heard of, but God sort of built me upside down. You know, he gave me a passion for something I have no talent for and a genius for something I have no interest in. So that's it. But there's a wisdom in that, a holy wisdom in that you don't have the opportunity to embellish your career with expectations because you don't know what it is you're able to do. But because of that, I entered the field of health and healing, something I never wanted to do, with a very naive ideas. And one of them was that everybody wanted to be healthy, that everybody would do anything to get their health back. Because actually, you know, that was kind of the model that I witnessed in my own childhood, that, you know, you just get up and go, you just do anything to get your health back. And so that was what I witnessed. So it struck me. And then when I partnered with Norm Shealy, who is a health fanatic wizard, and would take absolutely no weakness, take no weakness, just respect no weakness, get up, go, you know, that was drilled into me. And so my role as a medical intuitive was to discern where you were losing power and to provide a map of how to retrieve your power. And then once you had that map, get busy. You know, what did you need to do? Why would you come to see someone like me and a superb physician like Norm if you didn't want that map? How were you losing power? You know, what attitudes were draining you? What health style practices? And if you had that, why would you not act on it immediately? And what I saw, what I witnessed, is that the majority of people would look at the idea that they had to change their health habits, that they had to become uncomfortable, that they had to go through a period of transformation. And that's the operative word, a period of transformation, that they had to reconcile their traumas that they had become accustomed to speaking about, that they had to release their suffering, deal with it, finally close the door on it, not forget it. And that's something I want to emphasize here, not forget their suffering, not dismiss it as though it never happened, but find a way to live with it, but not use it, and not let it use them. And that's the great turning point that most people could not get over. That in fact, that trauma had been turned into a social currency, a way that people could say to someone else, "You don't understand what I've been through," or "I've had a bad day at work, I've suffered at work, and therefore I get to come home and pass that suffering through me, channel it through me, and abuse you." And the next thing you know, someone who's had nothing to do with the wounds of your childhood, the traumas you've had at work, your feeling of low self-esteem because you can't stand up for yourself or present your creativity, and your self-loathing about that, you get to come home and beat them up and throw your childhood at them. And the next thing you know, they're apologizing to you for refusing to be abused. "Oh, I'm so sorry, that's right, I forgot. I forgot you were abused. Go ahead, yell at me, I'll make your day better." I realized that the real healing was not that trauma, but the power it gave people to continue to traumatize others, to pass that on, and to live in this inner atmosphere of self-pity, and how it protected people as a shield from dealing with the fear of being humiliated and not in the world and not dealing with that primal fear of the absence of self-esteem.
One of the ways that I noticed it was helpful for me at the time was that I'd been ill for a few years at this point, and I'd had no one that really I could talk about it that understood it. And I was in a relationship at the time with a woman who also had the same condition. And it was a healthy relationship in many ways. But one of the things that we noticed, and we both read the book around the same time, was that we lived separately. We were both at university in different parts of the country. And every night when we spoke, the central theme of the conversation was how we'd felt that day with our symptoms, like how we'd felt when we woke up, what had happened, what detox reaction we'd have. And it was like our point of connection was through the condition and through being ill.
That was your intimacy.
Right, exactly. And when we realized that from this concept of woundology, we stopped doing that. And what we found was that our connection was much more nurturing. It was much more supportive when it wasn't just through suffering and pain and the misery of what was happening. And I think a lot of people go on a journey that perhaps they've been in denial and ignored their trauma or their history. And it's been a healthy step to understand it and to become aware of it. But it's almost like the breakthrough at one stage has become the limitation and the stuck point at the next stage.
You hit something very vital, Alex, because when a person can finally speak about their vulnerability without shame, when they could finally, everybody needs a holy witness. Everybody needs that stage of having someone witness through the sharing, this is what I experienced. And to have someone validate that in some way, they were violated, wounded, hurt. But that stage is a stage you go through. You cannot live there. And if they turned it around and thought and realized or even considered that there was somebody or many people living in the world who were constantly reliving what they did to them, turn it around. How would you like to find out that there was someone who every single day was talking about how horrible you were to them? And this is what people don't consider. They always think it's just them, that the world revolves around them and their wounds. And they never think about how they've wounded others. Or shall I say, they rarely think that other people are in therapy because of them. Because of them. It's always about what has been done to them. And they have to reverse that. And if they had that conversation with someone who sought them out because of what they did to them, they would likely say, I didn't mean it. I had no idea. Get over it. How long are you going to hang on to this? They would more, those would be the more likely responses that I would bet on, rather than having the patience to sit there and give 10 years of therapy to something they had no idea hurt them that much.
One of the things that I really appreciate about your way of working, and just as a sideline, I founded a company, Conscious Life, which live streams a lot of Caroline's events. So I've kind of dipped in and out of seeing quite a few of your kind of intimate in-person events. And one of the things I've observed is your ability to give people sometimes tough truths, sometimes a certain clarity and a certain directness that in a way that people can hear, that I've noticed others can struggle with. Others other teachers may have to go very, very gently, or they go direct and people have big reactions to it. And it's something that I find impressive. And I sort of wonder how important you see that directness as being sometimes, when people can sometimes be too caught in their sensitivity and their vulnerability, and sometimes just calling out and seeing what's happening and the power of that truth.
I am so aware of a person's fear of being humiliated. So when someone says, I am very mindful of when I am what's called direct, that my language does not humiliate them. That I am, in fact, putting them in a cocoon, and I always ask permission to speak very directly. So I never go into their what we call their space, with the intention of showing people in the audience, see how clear I can be, see how precise, I know exactly how good I am at what I do. So I'm never doing it for the sake of performing or impressing. My intention is always, I gotta help this person, that's enough. You've been through enough, you gotta get out of this. And I think because I say a prayer ahead of time, I hold that in my intention, I ask them permission, and then I go in. And I want to extract something I know is causing them so much suffering. And enough is enough.
And seeing that truth is often what liberates people, right? That precisely. Having that clarity. Yeah.
Precisely. And I know they would not be with me if some part of them didn't want to be liberated from that demon. And often that demon is their own bargain, their own addiction to their darkness. They're addicted to wanting to punish somebody, and they can't get out of it. And the result of that, Alex, is that they develop a self-loathing with themselves. That after they hurt somebody, they don't feel good about it. In the moment, they have that conflict of anger and pride and I'll show you and I've got to win. But if you think they feel good about that afterwards, you are mistaken. They're not, they don't leave that room and feel like, good for me. They feel like hell.
Yeah. And as you say, often we don't realize that because we're caught up in our own reactivity and our own position.
Pride, your own arrogance, your own need to win. That's got to stop.
I want to broaden the discussion a little bit to looking at what's often underlying which you've kind of just been pointing towards, the suffering and the struggles that people experience. And so, be it physical trauma, be it physical health issues, emotional trauma, many of the challenges and difficulties that we experience in life are really spiritual in nature as opposed to necessarily psychological or physical in nature. And of course, in your work of developing energy anatomy, you've developed a sort of science in a sense of starting to understand some of that. But perhaps you could say a little bit for people which are perhaps still very familiar with this idea of, you know, I have this condition, therefore it only has this medical origin. Perhaps say a bit about the deeper spiritual nature of many of the challenges and sufferings that we experience.
Well, you know, that you're opening a cosmic can of worms here.
That was partly my intention.
not a simple one, because you're opening a paradigm. And that paradigm has so much to do with the way people need to construct their relationship with the universe itself. And in the world of simplistic thought, the polarity, it's very comfortable and controlling for people to live in a world that says, if there's one problem, there's one solution. There's one problem, there's one solution. And they apply that polarity thinking to their health. There's one problem, there's one solution. And which is because we're basically mathematical creatures. We basically, the world is a mathematical place. Everything is a number calculation thing. It's very Pythagorean. But when we come to consciousness, mathematical formulas become more calculus-like. There's more variables. And that's the nature of consciousness. What variable do you want to put into this formula? The variable is attitude. The variable is belief. The variable is stress. And then if you get even a larger hologram view, then we have the variables of what is your faith? What is your network of time and space, because you start to enter the more amorphous field of energy, which is not bound by horizontal time, but vertical. And that, do we start penetrating into the influence of other lives and other your life to my life? So we go from our macrocosm life, my personal, the influence of what I do, which is really, quite frankly, limited to what I ate that day. But is it really? it's also now in my health is influenced by the packing company and whether the food they processed was healthy. So it's not even, I'm not even in charge of my health by what I eat, because it could have been contaminated by someone else who packed it. Two, what are the influences in the air that could be the virus? To what are the influences in the collective that I'm attached to politically, for example, that give me a lot of stress? So I have a micro and a macro health. And then there's how I see the nature of God. So there's a very childlike theology that is, if I'm a good person, bad things don't happen to me. There's the view within that, that there's an off-planet God that's very paternal. And doing a reading on someone, within that polarity, I have one problem. What's my one solution? No longer works for me because it's not accurate. It's not accurate. And that's why I don't do readings anymore. Because when I'm dealing with someone, they want to know what's the one reason why this happened. There's never one reason anymore.
Yeah.
I see us as now existing in this hologram of creation. And I find it more my calling to teach this hologram, which is what I'm actually doing it right now in this Phoenix series that I'm doing. Because I see what we're going through as a Phoenix experience. We have our whole reality as we know it has tumbled from the pillar, but we are going to rise from the ashes. And I am taking this as an opportunity because we're on a global retreat and we've been sent home to reflect. And I'm walking people very, very slowly through the truth that we were expecting something. If you felt it in your collective blood and bones, this atmosphere was filled with psychic free radicals. And we could feel that something was coming. The stress of Brexit, the stress of Trump, the stress of all the the lies and the controversies and the fear and the spin in the atmosphere, all this the psychic pollution, plus the idea that was set into motion 60 years ago, 60 now, that this was the era of transformation, that we were because of entering the nuclear age, that we had to transform. We had to. We are the generations that have created our own destruction. And the fact is, through weapons of mass destruction, we are the people who once again, like Prometheus, have stolen the fire. But this time it's nuclear fire. We have created the means of our own destruction, nuclear destruction. There's nothing we can create. Nothing that can save us from the fire we've stolen. And if you look at history from the 60s on, it has been the history of who has the fire. Is it Pakistan? Is it India? Is it North Korea? And we've grown numb to this. That we wake up every day and wonder, is there going to be enough food? Who has the fire? Where are the refugees from this? Where? All we think about now, all we ever think about is not what can we create, but will we survive? That's all we think about. And we do not think about how is that impacting us? How is that impacting our collective health? If you don't think the hand of God has stopped the planet, you are mistaken. Sure, we're going to find some kind of crazy bat, the magic bat, the wild bat, the talk about Batman. But what we've done is we've taken our collective fear and we have manifested a pandemic. You want to know where health and stress come from? You think like what is in one is in the whole. Just like you can destroy your immune system from stress. This is the collective immune system. And for years, we've been taking this stress and projecting it on TV and on movies. Look at that, pandemics, global catastrophes, zombies, global this. We've been projecting this because we've been expecting it.
Often on a micro level of people going on their you know, having health crises, be that physical or emotional health crises, becomes also the catalyst for change. And that also happens on a macro level. And I like the metaphor you use of the sort of the phoenix sort of rising, that in that suffering, in that kind of collective suffering, there is also that opportunity for transformation and for something always new to come forth.
Absolutely. And this is our great turning point. This is our great turning point. You know, we are on retreat. There's two ways to look at this, Alex. You can think you're either on retreat or you've been sent home and you're imprisoned. And that's the way, like, for example, Americans are looking at it. You can see that there's a whole base camp that are now thinking, you have no right to take my right away from me. And then there are those who have said, from the generosity of wisdom, what is in one is in the whole. I have to do my bit to help heal the whole. So you have the faction that gets it. Those who are responding with their soul, with their heart, with their wisdom, those who are participating in the healing of the whole and have gone on retreat and are collectively praying and are doing what they need and are getting something is transforming us. And they're the ones that are trying to figure out a way that the society will never be the same, that flights will never be the same, airplanes are going to change. We have to wear masks that in fact, for decades, we've been screaming, I want my own space. Now you have it. Now you have it. You have all your own space, and it may be that way for the next year. Now they're feeling this craving to be near somebody, this craving for each other. Now the transformation in us is beginning. Now we are thinking how to slow down. Now the air is being cleared and the earth is resting. Now perhaps we will get that our values have been so askewed that the health of each other is what counts. But the other camp, they're still going to crave all about me. So we're going to see a rise in violence and a rise in love. And that's going to be the two camps.
You mentioned prayer, and you mentioned, I want to open up your new book that's coming out later this year, the Power of Prayer. I think for some people, when they just hear the word prayer, that triggers certain ideas and certain reactivity of, oh, I was made to go to church as a kid and I don't do prayer. And prayer can mean a lot of things to different people. So maybe just when you talk about prayer in this context, say a bit more about what you mean and what that real power is.
Well, you know, first of all, my father always said there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole, and this is a foxhole.
That's great. I like that phrase.
So let me start there. But when people think of prayer and religion together, I get that, but they're wrong. Religion is the politics of God, so get over it. Get over it. And there is no off-planet God. And I'm not talking about a priest or a minister. Knock it off. I'm so sick of that. There is there is no man in the sky. There is no off-planet human being. What's emerging is a understanding that God is law, that this is an era of biospiritual ecology, that the laws of the universe and the laws of our biology and the laws of creation are an expression of this divine force. And that it is an impersonal universe, impersonal. The law of gravity is impersonal. You jump, I jump, we're gonna fall. But the law of creation is personal. It's intimate. What you decide to give gravitas to, seriousness, is going to stick, and that's karma. And you'll be held accountable to that. And what makes your relationship with all of this, you're walking in God. Let me just point it out. All life breathes together. You are walking in the divine. And it's irrelevant to me that you can't figure it out. I don't care. Your arrogance is not my issue. This is God. And I don't care about anybody's political correctness. I didn't use the word God. Shut up. Call it what you want. This is the nature of creation. And you are held accountable for every choice you make. And that's just the way it is. And prayer makes the universe intimate. And prayer is power. Every word, because you, this is a universe in which co-creation has been given to us.
Say a bit more, when you say co-creation, say a bit more about what you mean by that and how that works.
Well, I mean that energy comes before matter. And our energy is our consciousness, is a co-create, our soul is a participates in the co-creation of matter. Energy, matter, like it does in the co-creation of our body, of our cell. You can't ask me, how did I participate in the co-creation of my health? And that then apply it in principle to the larger co-creation of events. Things just don't fall from trees. They don't happen spontaneously. We're the engines of all of this. We're the reasons the oceans are polluted. We are. The ocean didn't pollute itself. We're the engines of co-creation here. We are. You know, all life breathes together. And we are also connected to each other through an inner net that works just like the internet. We are wired to each other through a psychic field. That's when someone says to me, and I was just thinking about that person and they called and they just can't get over it. That's because they don't get how they're wired. They don't get how they're intuitively wired. We are wildly, intuitively electric creatures. But when you get the nature of the divine, you might, if you decided to go inside and begin a deeper path, which is people move from having a job to survive in life to eventually always everyone will go from a job because they have to survive. And eventually something will wake up in them, Alex. And they'll realize a job is someone else telling me what to do with my power. And eventually they will get to a point where it drives them crazy and they'll rebel, because they'll want to use their creative, the power. They'll want their power. They'll want to take charge of this thing called their power. And they'll have to find a way. And they'll start moving and shifting to the career, to the self-creative stage. But eventually that won't work either. Eventually, this is where they start getting into the field of their spirit. And they're starting to discover. And at that stage, what happens is their consciousness begins to bubble up. And they'll start feeling their emotions and their psyche. Their memories will come up. Their traumas will come up. They'll begin, the wheels of transformation will begin. So where it starts, where they want to transform their external life, in the job market, then they want to transform their internal life. And that's when the spirit starts. But then that won't be enough. Then that won't. In the field of energy, because energy has no power. It's got its limitations. Like in healing, you'll go to an energy healer and they'll make you feel better, but they can never, ever, ever heal an illness. They'll just modify it. Eventually, you'll feel the urge to start seeking. Here's your operative word, holy language. To start seeking. What else is there? What else is there? And now you're knocking on the gates of heaven. What else is there? For what reason was I born? Who's supposed to answer that question? Your neighbor? What? That's not a question. It's a prayer. That's how you pray. For what reason was I born? You don't think everyone listening to this hasn't asked that question? You are mistaken. Ask them. Who is supposed to answer that question? FedEx? You know, DHL? And as soon as you ask that, the next wheels, the wheels of your soul start. And a restlessness begins. And now you start the mystical journey. The mystical.
What part of what I'm hearing you say is that I think how a lot of us have been conditioned to think about prayer is as a sort of passive, almost like victim, I need you to fix this for me. And what I'm hearing you say is that it's actually, it's a very different, it's an act of taking responsibility. It's an act of one being an active participant in that process.
Yeah. You know, God doesn't cover stupid. You are wired to hear the divine all the time. That's why you have a conscience. That's why you have intuition. And guidance flows through that all the way. You have a metronome that says, this isn't right. This is good. This is evil. This is okay. This is not. That is the flow of organic divinity through your blood and bones at all times. You are never outside the field of guidance. But then you want some higher altitude stuff. And that's when you start doing this. Help me out here. Help me out here. But it takes a more refined, mature spirit, because you'll get divine counsel. You'll get a yes. You'll get something. And you are meant to act on that. And I'll prove it to you. When I say to people in my workshops, I want you to go home. I want you to go back to your rooms tonight and do a list of every good thing you've ever done in your life. I mean, from the get-go, everything you've said that's good and nice and loving, everything you've ever done for anybody in your whole life since you were 2 years old, that's good and loving and kind and wonderful and sweet. Every note you've ever written, every card, every gift. And I want it here by 8 o'clock in the morning. And all of them go, what? Right? Because who could remember all the goodness someone's done? Who? I said, every good thought. I want every good thought on there. And I said, oh, all right, then I'll give you this one. I want you to write down 5 regrets. No one has a problem remembering the regrets. And I said, now, why do you think that is? I said, why do you think that is? How come all of you recall, I knew I should have done this, and I didn't. I got that feeling. I knew it. I got this hit. Call this person. Say this. I said, how come your sense of self, your soul, won't let you forget a regret? It's because heaven told you, do this, and you didn't listen. And I said, if you think heaven lets you ever forget, you didn't listen, you're mistaken. Heaven doesn't care. They keep track of all the good stuff. You can let that go. But heaven never lets you forget. I told you, and you're not going to forget next time, because it's for your best interests and everybody else. This isn't punishment. This is guidance. That's how heaven works. And prayer, let me just say, when you pray, you got to pray like you're crazy, Alex. You got to pray like miracles happen all the time. You got to pray like in the moment. Like when I pray, sometimes when I'm talking to someone right in front and they're driving me crazy, I'll actually say to them, I'll be right back. But I don't go anywhere physically. I simply retreat into myself and I'll say, you better download me with some grace right now, because I'm about to lose it. I'm about to lose it. And help me out here. Calm me down.
One of the things that I find myself wondering, a lot of what you, one of the things I think that you bring is a certain, people need to raise their game. People need to show up. People need to take responsibility. And I find myself wondering, for those that have that niggle, they have that instinct, that feeling, either that they're off their moral compass or it's time to make a change and step up. For those that manage to take the leap forward and those that end up recoiling back into the familiar, what is that difference? What helps people take that leap? You have those moments you're working with people, you see in workshops that someone manages to take that leap forward. What supports that?
You know what? They have the courage to let their life change. Because honestly, the second, the moment, the instant you jump into prayer, the instant you become conscious that you do hear, you do sense God, you do, and you start responding, the second, the instant, your life starts changing and it's never the same. And that's when, going back to woundology, you then become conscious, I am now using darkness to harm another person, and you have to change your behavior. And once you consciously, and what is this all about? What is the spiritual path about but becoming conscious of how you use your power? Then you get, I do co-create my life, and this is my tool. My tool is how I choose to respond in every moment. And then eventually that response becomes more and more conscious, in that you become more and more perceptive about what the sensitivities are of the person you're with. And the choice becomes more courageous, because when you're with someone, you become more aware of their vulnerability, and love is called for in ways it was not before. Whereas before, you might want to have been impatient, but now it's calling for a greater response than the person you're with is capable of giving you. And that's when you realize my heart has to be bigger than their heart. And that's when you realize the rules how you live by are no longer defined by, well, they don't do that, so why should I? No longer. You are now on your own path. How you live is between you and your soul, not based on what they give you, but what you give. And that's when you need prayer, because if you live in the mindset that I'll only give what I get, you will exhaust yourself and you will be bitter and you'll keep track of what human beings do and you'll feel sorry for yourself eventually. And you'll run out of steam and your immune system will deplete itself. But if you decide, no, this is between me and God, so fill me up. Fill me up every morning, fill up my tank. And when I sleep, let the angels take me out and recharge me. Take me to the realm of healing and work on me through the night. And return me in the morning. You'll be fine.
There's a certain momentum, isn't there, that when someone has the courage to take this idea of co-creation, someone has the courage to take that little step, what may feel like a leap, but maybe it's a little step, that sets something in motion that then somehow has its own momentum.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's just having the courage to take that step to get things moving, that little bit, to then suddenly find things going in that new direction.
That's right. It really is. And sometimes it takes prayer to do that. Someone I know incredibly well and love very deeply realized that he was an alcoholic and that he needed the support of AA to get out of it. And then he told himself he wasn't. And then he told himself he was. And then he drove one day to an AA meeting that he heard about in a church. And then he drove back home, didn't go. Then he got on his knees and he said, I want to quit. Get me to the place where I want to, and I'll take it from there. That is the type of courage. And then he got there. And how he got there was he began to feel relentlessly nervous, relentlessly restless, in a way that he hadn't felt before. Like he was going to implode if he didn't do something about his anxiety. guidance almost comes as anxiety. And I think what people don't get is that they think they associate the divine with peacefulness and not the tools of our nature. Anxiety, stress, depression. These are often the tools of God. And so often people mistake clinical depression for what is in fact spiritual crisis. And all this rise in clinical depression these days that people go and they seek medication for, they don't get. They're in a dark night. They're in a spiritual crisis, not a clinical one. And they are at the door of the soul. But because they have an anxiety or a resentment or a distaste for the church, they don't get that the soul doesn't go to church, that God has no religion. God's never had a religion. They've got to get that this is the era of the cosmic divine. And that cosmic divine doesn't squeeze into churches. It's the era of the Abrahamic religion is over. So
I'm mindful of time, Caroline. There's so many more places we could go, but I think that's actually a quite beautiful place to end. For people that want to find out more about you and your work, and I know that you have a number of online programs as well as amazing in-person events. Say a bit about where people can find out information and also the book that's coming out later in the year.
Right. I would invite everybody to join me on my Phoenix series, which is the first has they can get already online, and then the second one will be starting in a week and a half, and that's at Mace, MYSS.com. And then there are other classes available already online, and so all the information about me is at my website, and that's what I would say, come to my website.
Fantastic. Caroline, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you.
Yeah, I add one other thing. I do a bunch of little video things on YouTube as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And also, I really encourage people to look out for the book that's coming out later in the year as well.
All right, my book, The Power of Prayer.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.